Jeremy Plonk, standing by, joins us now. Good morning.
Hey, I'm just wondering why we didn't get any theme music before the segment today. I need a little old school. I think it was Larry Rowe. I'm so dizzy, my head is spinning.
Look at you.
I don't know what day of the week it is. I don't know where I'm at this point in time, where I'm physically located, but we're inundated with information and looking forward to sorting it out at some point.
Well, it'll get a little bit easier, at least, I think most of the major decisions that had people kind of wondering, Catalina Cruiser declaring for the sprint. It was pretty obvious from early on Mattioli was going to sprint. The Omaha Beach decision, some of that all became clear. There's those, I think, of the dust is settling. Bricks and Mortar is going to cross enter, but he's running in the turf. It doesn't right. feel like we'll be in as much flux between today and next Monday.
No, I mean, that part will come together. Then it becomes, the devils you know and the devils you don't know and how you prepare for those. I mean, for me, it's obviously I'm adequately equipped, I think, on the three-year-old, the two-year-old so far this year, the Keeneland Racing, the Kentucky Circuit that I follow close, the major horses at Santa Anita. A little lighter on the New York horses than most, just not my wheelhouse, and the internationals are where I'm going to have to study up. I mean, I'll have a point of once we get the past performances for these races. It'll be a couple days of good study till next Monday, Tuesday or so. Studying a lot of the Europeans. It'll be reading a lot. I think that the Europeans are a little more honest, I think, in the press about how their horses are doing and what they like and what they don't like than the American trainers, who give canned answers most of the time. A lot of reading and a lot of race replay watching. But race replay watching is tough with the Europeans because just the style of those races are so much different than what we see in the U.S. I mean, a horse may quicken and show a tremendous turn of foot, but if they ran the first, they ran the first mile in 140, they can quicken a little more than they would, say, in the U.S., So the Europeans will remain a quandary for me. They always do at the Breeders' Cup, but to me, it makes it exciting. I mean, I'm glad they're there, but as a handicapper, they certainly add an X factor that's difficult to assess.
That's fair. And if I want to make a parallel, I'll utilize the recent success of there were a couple of Chad Brown two-year-olds. Structor was one of them, and there was also a filly. And both of them had won and broken their maidens with what would be considered modest figures. And when they got their chances, and when you were comparing them to the Fuller Field stake opportunities, you had to you kind of suspend your normal mentality, mm-hmm. and appreciate the way, much more the race flow and the race style, and project how that was going to play against either a Fuller Field or a field that at a first glance looks like the horse would be, shouldn't be one of the favorites. And I think a lot of people have gotten into that habit and practice when it comes to Chad Brown, to realize that they may have just done what they needed to do, and they're going to be as effective against a better field, and that you can't simply make a summary judgment, and
right.
that's the same kind of approach that you have to take with the Europeans, because the times aren't going to compare, and it's a bit of a mystery for the most part, and that's one of the reasons that years ago when those video compilations would come out and you waited anxiously.
the DVD ROM.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm old enough that I was getting VHS tapes. So don't forget your DVD. We'd get those two. You'd get the two.
If you tell me they're on Betamax, I'm going to call BS on it. But if you go VHS, I'll go to that point.
Well, I had a Beta. You talk about Beta. My first recording device player was purchased in Cincinnati at Steinberg's, and it just so happened that Cincinnati, because of Steinberg's, who was a big Sony outlet, Cincinnati was a Beta town. Beta was bigger there than VHS, and so I started with a Beta. Yeah, and then I realized
a friend of mine's dad had a Beta, to get off track just because my mind is spinning. A friend of mine's dad had a Beta that had one of the first remote controls on it, but it was actually attached. You know, it had a cord to it.
Sure.
The cord was only about 18 inches long, so you had to be 18 inches away from the damn Beta to use the remote anyway. Why wouldn't you just lean over and press the button? But, I mean, that was technology in advance back then. But, well, hey, a point you made about the Chad Brown horses, though, on a serious note, of you know, why they may just do enough, you know, especially early on. Watch the workout videos. You know, XBTV has such a wonderful library of these from New York, Florida, California, and all around the country, and, of course, for the Breeders' Cup horses, but watch every Chad Brown workout. There's two horses working together. They go slow. They finish up even. They do just enough finishing up. I mean, this is what they're trained to do, right? I mean, when these horses actually get into a race, they've never finished more than a nose in front of another horse at any point in their life. Every work that Chad puts out there looks almost identical. They come home well. They come home together. They hit the wire in a pair. And this is what they know to do, you know? Now, maybe if they get further into their career and they're let loose and could really do their thing. But to see like a Chad horse win by a measured half length and not a very fast time, like right out of the box, that's kind of to plan. I mean, look at the script. Look what he does with his horses every morning. And that's the beauty of being able to see some of these workout videos, is you get to see what trainers normally do and what they don't do. And then look at Steve Asmussen. You watch most of his works, and then you see what the heck Mottoli did yesterday. And that is so, like, that's even Baffert for Bob Baffert, you know? I mean, that amazing gate work that was fast, and that's not the norm for Steve. And even Bob commented on after, you know, saying, I thought my horses worked fast until I saw Mottoli. One of the great, we talk about, you know, reading trainer language, you know, they don't talk about their horses very, you know, openly a lot of times. They're kind of close to the vest. But when a good trainer talks about somebody else's horse, especially somebody in another division, you should listen, you know? And when Bob Baffert's wowed by Mottoli, that tells you something, and I think that's pretty significant.
It was funny because Jay Pribman joined us yesterday, and Jay, the quip came through Jay where he said, "I thought the track was playing slow." after he sent Bast out. Jeremy, I want to talk Keeneland with you, but let's get a couple of quick Breeders' Cup hits in while we have the opportunity. And we're about 15 minutes away from the start of what should be about either a 45-minute or probably an hour-long announcement of the pre-entered fields. We've got the wagering guide coming out Friday.
Yes, Breast Breeders' Cup Wager Guide will be available for free download on Friday. And 14 analysts are rolling in right now. That's part of why I'm spinning. And we're waiting to get the final word on some of these pre-entries to see where we're at. But guys have been and gals have been working hard in advance and preparation and research. It's going to be a great product. Free download, expressbet.com. Check it out starting Friday, and then we'll update it race week after we have the final entries and everything like that. So give you two chances to check it out.
In addition, we'll keep reiterating, XB, as you just referenced to, XBTV has got the Breeders' Cup section. The 14 races are segregated, and all the horses that are under those banners, you've got virtually every...
About 300 workouts now.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Just for Breeders' Cup horses. And a lot of the prep races, too. So if you're looking for an easy place where all the prep races are aggregated and together, I think there's 75 or more prep races across the division, 300-plus works now, and that's just growing, you know, and we'll continue that. And there's something really neat I want people to catch next week at XBTV. All the paddock schoolers that come through during the week, we're going to be rolling on them, checking them out. Millie and Zoe are going to be in the paddock all week at Santa Anita making their notes, and at the end of next week, you'll get a report for Friday and a report for Saturday of the paddock lookers and the paddock schoolers for the week. And a lot of these horses you've never seen physically up close, and maybe they only gallop really slow in the dark. You know, the gals are going to be there in the paddock at San Anita putting their eyes on them and giving you an update on it with a video report next week. So really looking forward to that.
Very nice. So Millie Ball, and in addition to Millie, Camille Yachtine will be there as well. And
you never see them in the same place.
It's very funny. Or you see them in the same place constantly. Zoe and Jeff Siegel as well with Jeff's analysis. Jeff will be with us Friday for his first initial impressions as well to build up toward next week. And also, Horse Player Now. Jeremy, what's the Horse Player Now coverage plans?
We'll have full coverage Friday and Saturday of Breeders' Cup in the Buzz Report. All of our analysts are back, all nine of our staff and contributors, Numi and Caton and myself and Natto and Spencer and Terrell and all the guys that you're used to, Schottenkirk and company, all contributing, Nahil, Dino, who am I missing here? I think I've got everybody now. So a full lot now. We've got our starting nine all ready for the Breeders' Cup. You'll get all of our picks, analysis. We do fair odds on each horse. One of our skills of Horse Player Now is our pricing and our ability, I think, to set a great fair odds line, and that'll be part of the Buzz Report too.
Very nice. You know, I hope you can keep Brian W. focused with this big move to Vegas.
He's a little screwed up with the time zone change. I can tell you that. You know, he's not used to, like, hey, I've got to get something done by 9:20 a.m. You know, that's not his MO, but. He gets to finish work a little earlier, being 3 hours behind now. But, good luck to him out with the Vegas move. And Frank Caroli, one of our guys, does a lot of stuff with Horse Player
That's
Now.
That's right.
Press Bet. Frank's also a Vegas guy out there, so they'll get to hang out some. That'll be nice.
Excellent. Well, I wanted to make sure you let everybody know, horseplayernow.com. And, of course, Tuesday nights, we typically you're with us Tuesday. We didn't get a chance to mention the night school action from last night, but it's all available to everybody.
Yeah, an interesting lesson last night, one we've never done before, which is hard to believe after 9 years, but we called it handicapping red flags. And these are the things that turn us off. You know, when you see a particular situation or a group of lines in a past performance, what scares you away? What should you avoid? Interesting lesson last night. So about 30 minutes in length. Check it out when you get a chance.
Excellent. Let's turn our attention away from Breeders' Cup, which we're going to do plenty of, obviously, and get a couple of thoughts in about Keeneland. And when we talked last week, we were looking forward to the series of I thought, very productive, as it turned out anyway, stake races. We talked to Ian Wilkes about Gentle Ruler yesterday. On Monday, a delight to get Neil Pessin on to talk about Bell's the One. There were nothing but good prices. Lady Prancelot's win as well in the Valley View at a fat 10-1 for those that have stuck with her. The whole Keeneland meet, and you know, we got Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Got four more cards, but I've paid closer attention this fall than usual, and it's really been a good meet.
It has. It's been tough on favorites, but there haven't been like head scratching bombs. You know, the toughest meets are the ones where they're either $4 or $40, because you don't want to play the $4 horse and the $40 horse you couldn't have got with the search warrant. So. You know, these mid-range prices have ruled the roost. I mean, favorites last week went 6 for $46 at a major meet, you know. 6 for $46 at a place like Keeneland. In 5 days of racing, there was one winning favorite the first 4 days of the week, and it blew up on Sunday with two winning favorites on the nine-race card. I mean, it was tough sledding, but they weren't huge prices. I mean, you just kind of, like, look down the line and 6, 7, 8, 4, 3, you know. I mean, the average winner is somewhere around, like, $12. But they're not favored. So that's kind of what you want, you know. And as a handicapper, it's been good in that respect. They're still tough to get, though, because at Keeneland in that 5-to-1 range, there's four options almost in every race that kind of puts you in that ballpark, even when you get beyond the favorite and you're juggling. And, you know, where you used to maybe rubber stamp a Mike Maker or a Kenny McPeak or somebody like that at Keeneland, they're not winning. And Eddie Keneally go for the meet. Usually Eddie would drop a couple maiden claimers in at 6-to-5 and run up his percentage. He hasn't won at the meet. Mark Cassie, after opening weekend, really hasn't done much. So the names that you're used to seeing and the public's used to just kind of gravitating to aren't racking it up this fall, which is why you're seeing favorites lose because the favorites are generally from those kind of barns, and they're winning it, you know, 10, 12, 15%, but they're not winning it 25, 30. And so it's leaving some of those good price plays to the off-Broadway names, if you will. And when you kind of look down and you see Neil Pessin winning stakes races and stuff like that, that's what we're talking about. But that was a really – Bell's the One was a really live, gettable horse. And, you know, I've struggled this meet in terms of percentage. I won't lie to you about that. But, you know, you catch Maxfield in the Breeders' Maturity, you catch Bell's the One at 13-1 with your picks in the stakes race. A couple of those high-profile ones and ones you like more than others can make up for a lot of the volume. And, you know, that was a good one. And I thought that, you know, Lady Prancelot at 10-1 was, you know, I mean, what kind of overlay was that in the Valley View at a grade three? You know, had she stayed in the QE2, she's not anywhere near the favorites, but I don't know if she's too much higher than 10-1 in the Queen Elizabeth the second.
Yeah, it was strange.
As she was here, she's 15-1 in the QE2. She goes off 10-1 in the grade three and wins it. You know, I mean, that there are good prices to be had. They're not always obvious to you, but it's been a good meet in that respect. One note for today, Bound for Nowhere is going to scratch out of the sixth race, which is a really good turf sprint. In fact, the best turf sprint allowance I can ever remember at Keeneland. Bulletin's in there, last year's Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf winner. And Bound for Nowhere wasn't there for Wesley, but scratch. Interestingly, if you go back and watch the works, Keeneland had this work on their video feed on Sunday. Kamari, the two-year-old filly who's running in the Juvenile Fillies turf, she worked with Bound for Nowhere and easily outworked him, I thought. I thought she looked much better than he did. Now Bound for Nowhere scratches out of this race, which doesn't necessarily surprise me based on what I saw. But when a two-year-old filly's working with one of the top 20 turf sprinters in America, like I think Bound for Nowhere is, that's pretty significant, and she outworked him. And now Bound for Nowhere scratched out of this one today. And I'll take a shot with Great Wide Open today if somebody's looking to make a gamble in the sixth race.
Well, and I was going to ask you for some thoughts. Connor Murphy, Great Wide Open, who's kept good company typically. Connor Murphy, it seemed, was only for a while, I only saw him running in stake races, it seemed. So this is a fun, eclectic group. And
yeah, I like to cut back on this one, you know. And if you look in the pedigree, you know, the dam sire for Great Wide Open is Schwazier, who was one of the great turf sprinters in Australia, you know. And so I'm thinking going short might work better for this one. It's been showing speed going long, so shortening up the trip. And, you know, Bulletin's down on the fence, and, you know, we've got some questions in here. I thought Bound for Nowhere would be in the race, obviously, in the original picks, and they'd go a little quicker. So looking for somebody just to touch off the pace. Look, these turf sprints, get this, Steve, the turf sprinters at Keeneland this meet, the average winner's been five or six lengths. It's either five or six lengths back after the opening half mile. They only run 5.5 furlongs. So the average winner's been 5 to 6 lengths off the lead with a furlong, to, you know, furlong and a half to go inside the quarter pole. I mean, deep closers have won these turf sprints. So looking for a horse on the cutback, and you know, obviously they'll be outfooted early going 5.5 on the grass and try to finish up. That's the thought process. But closers in these turf sprints have done very well this week.
Well, we're watching as the video feed should start in just a little bit, and we'll watch for some of the fields to be announced. This is some years I've tuned in, and I don't know, it doesn't make for great radio, but we'll we'll keep an eye on it for any shockers or surprises. How about elsewhere on the card or tomorrow too, because we've got maidens, and certainly one maiden storyline, Jeremy, that has emerged here in the last, I don't know, call it 6 weeks. Cherie DeVoe, who
right.
is out of control, has won, I believe, with either 5 or 6 of her last 10 first-time starters.
Yeah, one of them at Keeneland was a really sharp runner, and she had another good second during the meet, too. You know, she's had limited starters here, but, you know, she's cut from the Chad Brown cross, but, you know, I mean, we're talking some win early and brilliant horses, and, I mean, Chad wins, obviously, with 2-year-olds, too, but, you know, not leaned upon. To be win early types, but you know, she's having a lot of success. The 2-year-old races at this meet, the Churchill runners have been okay. You know, first time starters have done their share. It's been mixed pretty well among the circuits. you know, we don't see a ton of the Kentucky Downs 2-year-olds. You know, on the turf sprint side, they've done okay. But, you know, there haven't been just a lot of, like, lead pipe, everybody knows kind of 3 to 5 walk-in in these 2-year-old maiden specials this fall. You know, one of the things with Kalen, I think, that's really become apparent to me during the course of this meet is by increasing the quality of the purses at Ellis Park, Churchill, and Kentucky Downs, which always had the big purses because they only run a couple days a year. But I think that has changed a little bit of the face of this team in fall meet. You're not seeing as many, like, run-back horses second time at the meet. You know, we already have the entries for Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then, you know, they'll draw Saturday, or they probably have drawn Saturday right about now. There's not that many in numbers compared, and the ones that are, you know, it doesn't look like a lot of the same stables that we're used to seeing. And part of that's because, you know, the purses at Churchill have been bumped a bunch. So, you know, where that was, I want to get one more run in at Keeneland before we move to Churchill, I think that's changed a little bit. And I think some of the horses and the people that you're used to seeing pattern-wise, like, be totally geared up for Keeneland, weren't necessarily, like, you know, Dale Roman's always supported Ellis Park, but I think even more this year, you know, and some of those barns that they haven't had as many 2-year-olds here at Keeneland as you expect to see. Kenny McPeak and you know, the Churchill fall meet in September, again, being so lucrative with the Ellis Park purses the way they were. And those guys had success up at Saratoga this year, too, so they may not have had as many maidens with conditions as they got to Keeneland this fall. But it's certainly, in the 2-year-old ranks, I think it's definitely made a difference. And I think those increased purses throughout Kentucky have had an impact on it. It's good for everybody. I'm not complaining about it. I'm just saying, like, when you're trying to figure out, like, you know, who's here and why they're here, I think it's a little bit different tale tone.
Well, any thoughts about the maidens today or tomorrow?
Let's see. Like I told you, my head's spinning. So which races today are the maybes?
You've got 2-year-old fillies that are turf sprinting in the third today. Then
Yeah, they shouldn't touch Sequin in there. I mean, you know, she comes out of the Alcibiades. And Byron, you know, Byron the sire's already had 2 wins at the meet for 2-year-olds. He's got Sequin in here coming out of the Alcibiades, where you remember opening day and opening weekend at Keeneland, it was very loose. You know, it was a very loose, tiring, cuppy racetrack. Because of the intense heat and dryness throughout Kentucky in that Indian summer. And it didn't really change until the second week of the meet when they got some moisture and cooler temperatures. So that she ran second all the way and then backed up to run fifth was not an indictment of a bad performance on Sequin at all. Any horse who kind of was up near the front the first 3 days of the meet and are running back here at the end of the meet, I think you have to move forward. And there are a couple of those in my handicapping throughout the course of Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Sequin obviously being one of those. I mean, she comes out of that race in the Alcibiades and then comes back in maiden company. She ran 2 good maiden turf races already in her career at Kentucky Downs and at Saratoga. So we know she can turf sprint, but don't take anything away from her off that one for sure. I think Sequin will be tough in there. And, you know, if you're looking for an early pick 4, pick 5, I think the early pick 5 today is going to be chalky. I mean, after seeing 6 for 46 last week with favorites, you're probably thinking I'm, you know, just walking into a trap here with this. But Unbridled Outlaw is probably going to be 2 to 5 in the first race on the class drop after the scratches. Looks really tough. Sequin looks really tough in the third. And Asmussen's horse, Hong Kong Helen, in the fourth, I think looks really good, too. That's another one of the maiden races in for a maiden claiming tag. And Steve, I like to look at patterns, and I looked at the last week of the Keeneland meet the last several years, like who saves horses for the end of the meet, right? Because that is a thing, you know?
Sure.
You look for it to lighten up. Steve Asmussen's won 7 races over the last 3 fall meets during closing week, 5 of them in maiden ranks. He saves maidens for these spots when it gets a little bit easier, maybe the ones that aren't the best in his barn or, you know, so he's got one like Hong Kong Helen today dropping in for a maiden claiming tag at the end of the meet. That's just kind of his MO here. Winning races at the end of the Keeneland meet. So, you know, I think you've got Sequin at a short price, Hong Kong Helen at a short price in the fourth, and Unbridled Outlaw potentially a short roll will be a short price and should be the winner in the opener. I mean, in the early pick 5, I see 3 horses who could be odds on or less. And, you know, if you're a chalk player, that's great. If you're a price player, you know, you're looking your chops saying favorites just got hammered all last week. They're only hitting about 24.5%, 25% for the entire meet. So it wasn't just a 1-week thing with the favorites. So, each race has its own island, that's for sure, and I think those horses stand out today, but the contrarians out there certainly could lick their chops and say, beat two of those three, and you're looking at another $10,000 pick five at Keeneland, which we've seen this meet.
Yeah, how about something for Thursday, too, for people listening to the replay?
Well, now you're really testing my ability to shuffle papers. Let's see. I got the Friday PPs up and the Wednesday. Let me move to Thursday here. What do we got on Thursday? And so I have to go through papers. Do you have any, like, hold music, like any Jeopardy or anything you can play for a minute?
Well, I can tell everybody that things are getting started. Mike Joyce and Gabby Gaudette on TVG are hosting the presentation, and they're going through the race order, it seems. Filly and Mare Sprint ends. I thought maybe the Dirt Mile would be first, but the Filly and Mare Sprint ends up being first instead. And that's for Saturday. Juvenile Turf Sprint, of course, starts the action on Friday, and they're going to show that first. And pretty much everybody, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, a dozen. They got 12 for the Juvenile Turf Sprint, including Kamari and Four Wheel Drive. Fair Maiden, Owen Hardy, is going to make first preference for the Juvenile Fillies Turf for the longer race, but just in case, she's potential in here. That band practice did show up for Amb Watson. Gary Contessa got in with another miracle as well, and both of the Simon Crisfords have entered, Ali and Al Raya for Crisford. So and certainly Al Ali is a major player in here, but Wesley Ward with three of his own, Cambria, Four Wheel Drive, and Kamari. Interesting couple. Tom Dascom shows up with Dr. Simpson, a French bred. That was not on the list. Oh, actually, then there's a second page. These are not selected into the field types. Encoder, who John Sadler wanted to run here, didn't get in. Miss J. McKay, who Cal Lynch, we let everybody know about that horse. She is not part of the field either. She's third, it looks like, on the list. Well, that's boy, and they keep going. Here's another seven that, oh my God. There's like 13 horses, Jeremy, that that would like to get into the, they might have to run a second division of the turf sprint next year. Al, did we lose Jeremy? I think we did. I think
you
we did. All right. Now there we go. Now you're back.
Hey, I put it on mute because the zoo was going crazy here. I've got two dogs and a parrot going crazy. Apparently, they love the draw for somebody in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf.
It might be Mike Joyce's. Might be Mike Joyce's voice, like Kramer with with Mary Hart. Maybe that's what it is.
You lost me where I'm at. I'm completely lost.
That's a Seinfeld. That's a Seinfeld reference that Seinfeld
the
fans are.
I don't know where I'm at right now. What were we talking about before we got off?
Well, a Thursday play before I bring John White in.
Yeah, I've got a couple for you here on Thursday. In the fourth race on Thursday, I think Substantial is really one to watch. Again, we talked about Steve Asmussen's closing with the maidens. This horse ran against South Bend and ran fourth in a good race at Churchill. South Bend's already come back to win an allowance at the meet. A horse who ran up the track that day has come back to win a maiden special. So a very key race there. So I think it's Substantial in the third going to the turf. No reason why the bottom of that pedigree out of an Aragorn mare won't like the grass. So I think Substantial in the fourth on Thursday at Keeneland is one to keep an eye on. And the seventh is a really good allowance feature, some good runners in here. I think this is a classic race we've seen a million times set up this meet. Races with a ton of speed, and Julien Leperoux just timing his rally with precision. He is riding like Polytrack Julien from you know, 2010 right now. He's really in a groove, especially with the horses finishing. And I think there's a ton of pace in the seventh race on Thursday that sets up wonderfully for Blue Ridge Traveler. He's only had one start here at Keeneland. It was actually a win. He shows up 0-for-1 on the past performances because he was DQ'd and placed out of the money. But he actually won over the track, like this racetrack at Keeneland. And I think he's going to get a ton of pace. And there's some name horses in there. You know, DAC Attack, Guest Suite. Major Cabby won so impressively opening weekend. And one on the front. So, you know, I think that's one that for Peter Miller that has to get a lot of respect, Major Cabby. But I'm going to take a shot. Blue Ridge Traveler from off the pace. Julian is riding just perfect with horses like this.
He's had a terrific meet. Let me tell everybody quickly, a field of 10 for the juvenile fillies with one potentially running in the juvenile filly turf, Etoile. Which means star in French, Aidan O'Brien. And this is a horse that Aidan O'Brien did not tell the racing board that he was bringing. So a kind of a new name. Etoile pops up out of nowhere. Tango,
and that
told
was for the juvenile fillies?
Juvenile fillies, but she'll be cross-entered in the turf as well. And let's see about this, because here's the juvenile turf fillies, and I don't sense, let's see, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14 on the first page. Let's see if there's some exclusions beyond these, and pretty much everybody you expected, including the Euros, Roger Varian with Daya and Jessica Harrington with Albinia. K.P. Burke, Living in the Past. Here's one. Andrew Balding showed up. S-H-A-D-N. Must be a Gaelic name, and we'll find out how to pronounce it. Tango, nice. The juvenile fillies turf looks fun. Abscond for Eddie Keneally. Nacho brings Walk in Marrakesh. There are five that did not get selected into the body of the field. Precious Moments for O'Brien. That's another one that he hadn't mentioned. Unforgettable for Joseph O'Brien. Apple Cross for Baltus, and a couple two more. So there's. There's an interest. That's an interesting field, the juvenile fillies.
Yeah, now the juvenile. You got to know your circuits. You know, when it comes to the Breeders' Cup, and know your horses best, and then kind of move off of them. You know, and Sweet Melania, her win was, you know, visually really impressive in the Jessamine at Keeneland, but it was a race that didn't seem to have a lot of pace on paper. The ones who you thought might go didn't. Johnny V rode a masterful race that day and just took it to him, and. She might be one of those Jessamine winners that we've seen in recent years that looked a lot better at Keeneland than they did when they got against the others. You know, though we've seen some really good-looking Jessamine performances that just haven't translated over to the juvenile fillies turf. And I would be, without seeing the rest of the field, and my first inclination is, as a Keeneland guy, would be to take a swing against Sweet Melania. Curious to see what else is in the race and see what the options are. Of course, you know, Chad's going to have his pair in there that are, you know, he's won that division, what, four times in recent years. So, you know, you've got to consider that the place to start your handicapping, really, the way Chad's horses have run. But I would take a swing against Sweet Melania in there and just assume that she can't get it that good again. But she's pretty good.
Now, the juvenile ended up with some more names than we expected, but several of them basically throwing in case they didn't get into either the juvenile turf sprint or the juvenile turf itself. And to give everybody an idea, they're actually taking a little bit of a time out there. You got Baffert standing by, but American Theorem, Dennis's Moment, Eight Rings, Maxfield, Scabbard, Shoplifted, Storm the Court, and Wrecking Crew. Those were the eight we expected, but five others, actually four others, that have juvenile turf or juvenile turf sprint interests, and if they are excluded from either, they would end up running in here. And O'Brien with King Neptune, Maury with Full Flat, Peter Miller with Billy Bats, who I think did get excluded, and Blaine Wright, did enter, and no D'Or. First preference is the juvenile turf, and second choice here. And looking at the, let me look at the juvenile turf to see who may have gotten either in or excluded.
Well, you know, and Blaine's horse can really run, the one from Golden Gate, that Anel D'Or, that was an impressive first out, and, you know, would fit in either race, I think, you know, as a question mark. But on raw talent, you know, that's the kind of horse that's exciting to see this time of year.
Well, he's going to probably have to go on the main because, well, American Theorem will come out just in case for some reason Papa Padromo cross-entered American Theorem, but he won't have a problem running on the main if they want, but if he wants to run on the turf, he could. Encoder looked like he was on the outside looking in the juvenile sprint, so he may stay and run long for Sadler. Interesting. And, yeah, Encoder is second on the AEs for the juvenile turf sprint, and I don't even think I got the third page of exclusions. Unbelievable. Yeah, I feel terrible for Cal Lynch and the connections that were ready to supplement with Miss J. McKay. I mean, that she, if you hadn't seen her performance, she deserved a chance to run.
Yeah, you know, it's tough because I think, you know, without being in the committee rooms and things like that, I do think there is a tendency when it comes to the selection committees on the Breeders' Cup races to give the Europeans the benefit of the doubt. They want the international interest. There's a big ship to come over, so you don't want to be on the, well, am I or am I not? And I think in these turf races, you know, especially in the juvenile ranks and things like that, that there's a tendency to get the benefit of the doubt to the Europeans. I don't know the numbers right in front of me from what was in and out this year. But, you know, there's some logistical reasons for it, and I think there's some political reasons for it as well. But, it, you know, we don't complain by getting more Europeans in the turf races, obviously, you know. But I'd like to see some of those good American horses from, you know, off-Broadway racetracks that aren't in the spotlight get the respect. You know, there's some, especially in the two-year-olds, you know, there's, you know, like Gulfstream in the summer and fall isn't Gulfstream during the championship meet, but there's some really good two-year-olds that come out of Gulfstream every year, you know, and there's quality there. And out of the Mid-Atlantic, the same way, and you know, like the Blaine Wright horse, Anel D'Or, you know, but by Medaglia d'Oro, yeah. So maybe the dirt will be just fine, and the dam was a turf mare for sure, ran the Regret and the Long Island and races like that, but, you know, you got to get a spot, and if that's the only one available, you take your shot at it. The bad news is if you're trying to get into this year's juvenile as a chance to take a shot, I think you've got three really, really strong two-year-olds this year. And, you know, to beat Eight Rings, to beat Maxfield, to beat Dennis's Moment, you're going to do some work to finish third in this race, you know? I mean, one of those three could misfire for sure. Two of those three misfiring, I think, would be a stretch. All three of them misfiring would be true upset. You know, fourth choice down wins this race. It's a true upset.
John White standing by, and chances are we'll have John tomorrow, too, to some initial thoughts on lines and things. John, good morning. John.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm just looking at the turf sprint field, too, and Tom Albertrani with Final Frontier, Shecky Shabazz, Jason Service, Keneally, Girls Know Best, and Sadler Double Touch right now are excluded in the turf sprint, which ended up with, you know, obviously a full field, but boy, that's a tough one for the two Eastern horses. Belvoir Bay, Eddie Haskell, Fairyland, Imprimis, Legends of War, Leinster, Ohm, Pure Sensation, So Perfect, who I didn't think Aiden O'Brien wasn't supposed to bring So Perfect and ends up bringing both Fairyland and So Perfect. Stormy Liberal, defending two-time winner. Stubbins for Doug O'Neill, who gets Lance 2 in the race. And Totally Boss for Rusty Arnold, who has 2 in the race. Final Frontier and Checky Shabazz excluded is kind of a tough break for Albertrani and Jason Service, because Ohm is not going to get into the mile, so he'll run here.
I would guess so.
Yeah, John, some early thoughts about what you've seen so far?
Lots of horses entered.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
And they're all over the map. Yeah. Cross-entered here, cross-entered there. It's a big mishmash.
Well, just noticing here also the dirt mile. Snapper Sinclair on the outside right now. And there will be. So Snapper Sinclair will get to run, it looks like, in the dirt mile, because I doubt that he's part of the mile field. All right. Well, John, what do you do with these fields in terms of putting together, your initial scheme for the morning lines?
Well, one of the first steps for me will be to go to the Thoroughgraph once we get that, because this is a case where, unlike my day-to-day work at Santa Anita, for these Breeders' Cup races, I will get the Thoroughgraph figures, and they're such a helpful tool to really sort out the horses and horses that might get bet. This is a case where at least the people that are Thoroughgraph players or any other type of speed figure player, they won't be able to sit there and have an edge on me from that standpoint. So, and that takes a lot of time, because I write down the Thoroughgraph figure for each race for each horse that's entered on the entire card. And up for the horses cross-entered, I even go ahead and write them back down on that horse, and that's for their lifetime PP. So I found it's a 3 to 4 to 5 hour process, just that step in and of itself. But it's very, sure, very valuable. It's worth doing, but it's very laborious.
No doubt. Let me get a story in with the Philly and Mare Turf. Vasilika, the entry was accepted. Dan Ward will be listed as trainer. And, of course, Jerry Hollendorfer also on the ownership side, and I don't know how they dealt with that. So there's a story. Vasilika will get to run on her home ground. And
Magical is first preference turf.
Well, that was I think just that may just be a mechanics. When it comes to O'Brien, he does that a lot, where the horse is going to supposedly run in one place. The surprise, though, is that Just Wonderful ends up getting entered. And again, Aidan O'Brien with several horses, and thanks to Derek Lawson, who tells me that Hollendorfer, they basically changed the ownership to Janet. Janet becomes the listed Hollendorfer owner, until they figure out a way to screw her too. Very interesting how many O'Brien runners that O'Brien did not communicate to the racing board, how many have turned up in the entries.
That's very true, because usually he is pretty, forthcoming in terms of who he is planning to bring. So this is rather surprising. But, boy, that's one thing I've learned about this Breeders' Cup process. It's chock full of surprises.
Well, and 11-horse field for the sprint, and Mattoli didn't even bother to cross-enter in the dirt mile. Mattoli only enters the sprint, and Ron Moquette did enter Whitmore. He was on the fence, but he did enter him. Landeskog also, they were looking to decide when we talked to Doug O'Neill on Friday, and they went ahead and entered the sprint. Catalina Cruiser, Diamond Oops, as we told you earlier this week, Engage, Firenze Fire, Hot Creek Hustle, Imperial Hint, Landeskog, Matera Sky from Maury, Mattoli, Chancelot, and maybe Whitmore. So a absolute throwdown in the Breeders' Cup sprint.
The race I'm looking forward to the most, quite honestly.
And you and several people, I mean, that has been an addendum to so many discussions, that people saying that, you know, the sprint may be the best of the weekend. I've heard that repeatedly. The Breeders' Cup Mile, any surprises in here? Charlie Appleby did come with Line of Duty. David O'Meara with Lord Glitters. Richard Fahey with Space Traveler. It looks like everybody, we'll see if there's any other names, but Bolo did get in if he wants to run and in this spot. So Carla Gaines has got her choice. She can run him short or long. The mile's going to be very good. Mile's excellent.
Yes, it will. Circus Maximus, certainly one of the major players there. And got Stormy. I'm a huge Got Stormy fan. I look forward to seeing what she can do in there. And boy, Uni last time out for Chad Brown, she was mm-hmm. breathtaking.
Yes, she was. And both the fillies, Uni and Got Stormy. And I'll just keep reiterating that this El Tormenta, I learned my lesson in the Woodbine Mile. Derek Lawson says they are going to run long with Bolo. A couple of horses that did not make it into the mile field, Suédois, Trey's Fleurs for Condon, LeCoulin, Kieran McLaughlin. And that's a surprise that LeCoulin even turned up. Without Parole didn't get in for John Gunther and Chad Brown. Neck Shares as well, not selected into the field. So there could be some movement in the mile as well.
Well, that'll, as you say, that's going to be certainly a very good race. And it typically is, that mile from day one. It's one of the original Breeders' Cup races.
And has also produced its share of big prices and shockers over the years. The Distaff, any other extra names? Peter Miller with Mo C. Cal, John. He entered her in both the Philly Mare Sprint and in the Distaff, and that's a name that's going to be sort of an eyebrow raiser for everybody. Here's your Distaff, Blue Prize, Dunbar Road, Elate, of course, cross-entered, First Preference Classic, La Force, Midnight Bisou, Mo C. Cal, Ollie's Candy, Paradise Woods, Secret Spice, Serengeti Empress, Street Band, and Wow Cat finally did settle for a return to the Distaff.
And most likely this will be the shortest priced on the morning line with that I discussed with you last week with Midnight Bisou. Most likely 4-5, but we'll see how it all shakes out at crunch time. But that's what I'm thinking of at this time, 4-5 on Midnight Bisou.
Well, and they are gonna get this done by noon, it looks like, although they're gonna have to zip through the classic and the turf, and we've got about 90 seconds, I'm going to guess, to wrap it up. Jeremy, some final thoughts?
I'm just enjoying listening to John White. He can give me a call and talk all day.
That's like I can never get enough of Jeremy and Countdown to the Crown through the spring.
I love it. Well, tremendous job. John, I think we'll probably touch base again once you've had a chance to absorb all these fields, and they're going to continue on, the turf being offered up next. And if there's anything in here before we sign off. I tell you what, the entry box did get filled up. O'Brien here as well with a horse named Mount Everest, whose name never came up. What the? Unbelievable.
He's bringing everything but the kitchen sink.
For a guy who was only going to bring, six or seven, suddenly it's like 15. And, you know, they pre-enter. They don't necessarily bring everybody. That is not unusual for that team. Acclimate.
That's a very good point.
Alunek, Anthony Van Dyke, Arklo, Bandua, Bricks and Mortar, Channel Cat, Channel Maker, Magical, Mount Everest, Mississippi, cross-entered, of course, with the Philly and Mare Turf, as is Magical. Old Persian, United, and Zula Alpha. So a bigger field in the turf than we thought. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you in the morning.